if we want to understand why people are doing what they're doing, we have to be able to make a connection from the fruit that's being produced in their life to the root controlling desires that are actually pushing that behavior out in all kinds of ways. So last week we looked, I know the text is probably way too small on the screen for you. Maybe it's more readable up there, but it is in your notes. So we looked at a few examples last week. We talked about honking Mike, you know, laying on the horn because someone's pulling out in front of him, right? And he's irritated and makes gestures at this person. We talked about Katie, who yells in exasperation. Raise your hand, Katie. That's why I didn't have you specifically in mind, but thanks for being here. Am I the only one that ever picks anything up around here? Jack comes home from work, plops down on the couch, and just ignores the screaming kids. And then Shannon, who regularly stays up past midnight going through all that Facebook stuff. Okay, so four scenarios. And then on the other side, have some potential controlling desires that are causing that behavior. So just if you have a pen or pencil, draw some lines there on your notes. Take just a second to think about that. We don't know for sure, but what are some potential controlling root desires that would cause people to respond in those ways? Anger, okay. So anger could be, I guess, construed as a desire, but anger probably is the outworking of something that someone desires. So we get angry because of something being withheld from our heart that we want. So anger is a manifestation of us not getting a desire met that we have. Okay, so how'd you draw your lines? What connections did you make? What about Mike? What might be some of his controlling root desires on the right hand of the screen there? Control, okay. Wants to be respected, okay, good. He's late. Someone's making him late. So you might say he doesn't want someone else wasting his time, keeping him from doing what he really should be doing. Okay, good. What about Katie? What might be controlling her desires? Yeah. Okay, good. Anything else? Any other arrows you guys drew in there? Okay, how would inner pain result in someone staying up late on Facebook? Oh, I'm sorry. We're talking about, I skipped down. So pain, so Katie is yelling, wouldn't someone else pick up my, you know, why isn't I the only one picking stuff up? So how does pain cause that action, do you think? Any help? Okay, yeah, certainly there's something in her that wants to not feel like she's just presumed upon or taken advantage of. Yeah? Okay, all right, let's practice, Jay. I'm just having a little bit of fun with you. So, let's talk about Jack. What might be Jack's controlling root desire that causes him to come home after work and just kind of plop down on the... All right, doesn't want to be bothered. Has a stressful day, just kind of wants to block out the world. Emotionally unplugged. Woo, thank you. Yeah, ever feel like that? Man, I just like... Need to not talk, need to not think about issues and stuff. Just let me sit down and rest. Okay? Any others for Jack? What did I put for Jack? He might just desire to do something fun, you know? He at work all day, comes home, doesn't want to have to deal with the kids. I just want to listen to my music or play my video game or read the news or do something that I enjoy. What about Shannon? FOMO, good, yeah, I think so. fear of missing out on all the amazing stuff that my friends are doing. So in my little diagram here, which you guys can't see, I actually have multiple arrows going into. So it's often not just a single desire, although you can, you know, usually you can boil it down to a couple, two or three that are really motivating what someone is doing. But it can be complex in figuring that out. And not only in our own desires and what's motivating our behavior, but as you're trying to help other people, it's not always just as straightforward. Oh, that's the deal. You know, pick up that bullet point and we'll have you fixed tomorrow kind of thing. All right, well, let's keep moving. So we've been, the point of doing that is just to help us begin to think, okay, we're seeing certain behavior, certain fruit in our lives or other people's lives. How do we get from there to actually understanding what's controlling that person's behavior? What is in the heart that is causing them to do those things? So, finally then, let's just take a few minutes. I quickly... last week threw this on you, but let's talk for a minute and list some potential benefits and drawbacks to the following strategies for life change. So I've got two listed here, a fruit-focused strategy for life change and a root-focused strategy for life change. So let's talk about some potential advantages and drawbacks of a fruit-focused strategy for life. So if you're focused on fruit, you can focus on habits and routines and what people are doing, but you might not actually be focused on what's going on in the heart and for lasting life change. So a fruit-focused strategy really focuses on behavior, what you're doing, whereas a root-focused strategy is going to focus on what is causing those behaviors to come. Yeah. So the comment is that potentially if you're focused on a fruit producing strategy, you're potentially going to come up with a bunch of rules, and so it could be more legalistic approach to life change. Yeah, Kenny.
I think a fruit focused strategy is more on the action and the deed. One day you may be screaming and yelling at somebody on the freeway, and the next day you're teaching Sunday school. So it's complicated. Where if it's root, that fruit's just going to come out when God intends it to be.
Okay. Good. I'll take one more comment and then I'll try and summarize my thoughts on it and we'll move on. Go ahead. That's a great summary of what I would have said. So let me just re-encapsulate that with a couple of other thoughts that you guys have made. So I think a fruit-focused strategy has the benefit of it's very tangible. You can just say, hey, stop yelling, pick up your socks, do some things that both of us can determine this is what you need to do. It's measurable, it's external, and so it's nice in that regard. It's really easier to talk about stuff that you need to do differently or that you want me to do differently. But the drawback is, as Molly was saying, if you just focus on the externals, and the things going on in the heart haven't changed that were causing that behavior, you may trim that fruit off, but it's just going to keep popping up because what was feeding that behavior is still going to be there. On the other hand, a root-focused strategy for life change is messy. It's hard to understand clearly just on external behavior exactly what is controlling your heart and my heart. And there can be a number of factors. And then, as was mentioned, relinquishing desires is hard, right? It's one thing to say, okay, I'm going to change the way I conduct myself out here. But actually having my desires reshaped, remolded, man, that means letting go of some stuff I love, I like, I want, I desire, and so that can be a more painful process than just living according to a set of rules. But what's significant is that if the controlling root desires of our hearts are changed, then that's going to tend to, over the long haul, shape our lives and the fruit in our lives over the long term. Because what's causing the growth, what's causing that fruit to come out is actually connected to the controlling desires of my heart. So as those desires change, as those desires come into more conformity with who Jesus is, then we're going to see the fruit of that be more prominent in our life. Yeah.
And that's the value of sticking with someone. I'm thinking of some non-Christian friends of mine, sticking with them because they, I'm not going to pray for their fall, but it's very possible, and I want to be there. And I built up this relationship over time, and they can trust me, and I can speak life into their lives, and you know, hopefully I'm already doing that. But the long haul.
Yeah. Great comment. So, what Carol is saying is that if we know that this is where we have to really deal with stuff in the heart, then that's going to require a different kind of engagement than if we're just calling people to follow some rules. So this is going to involve helping one another change the way we think about life and what we do. Yeah. Well, let's move on then. And what I want to do is spend a few minutes relating the key functions of an ambassador to the role of serving as an instrument of change. So we're going to look at a few passages here. A key one that you've probably heard referred to in one way or another out of 2 Corinthians 5. So as we go through these passages, I want to ask you to be evaluating what are some key functions that are related to acting as one who is an ambassador representing Christ. Okay, so what does it mean to be an ambassador that is representing Jesus? What does a person do? What kinds of things are connected with that? So let's look at 2 Corinthians 5:20 through 6:1. Paul writes, "Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. For our sake, he made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Working together with him, then, we appeal to you not to receive the grace of God in vain." So let's just take a minute as we read that passage. What is an ambassador in that context doing?
Someone speaking for another.
Okay, all right, good. So a couple of times we come across this language that we appeal to you. We say some things to you in the hope that it'll bring about a response. Anything else in that passage? Patience? Okay. Trying to think where we... So we implore you. So again, I mean, he repeats himself. We implore you, be reconciled to God. This is not the first time, actually, Paul has written a letter to the Corinthians. So this is an ongoing, long-term pleading with them in behalf of Christ to do certain things. So an ambassador is going to be called to connect with the people that the one they represent wants them to connect with. Okay, good. Let's move on to 2 Corinthians 6. So we're just moving down a few verses. So Paul continues, "We put no obstacle in anyone's way so that no fault may be found with our ministry, but as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way by great endurance, in afflictions, hardships, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labors, sleepless nights, hunger, by purity, knowledge, patience, kindness, the Holy Spirit, genuine love, by truthful speech, and the power of God with the weapons of righteousness for the right hand and for the left." So we've talked about an ambassador being someone who speaks in behalf of one where they represent. What would we add to that role based upon these verses? There's a lot there. Can we summarize? Yeah. Okay, so being in a place to serve others, good.
I see it as having a testimony no matter what is going on in your life, even if it's very bad things, that you still have the heart for God, and people see that.
Okay. So how you respond, how you live out life in the midst of a lot of different circumstances, both good and bad, is going to be a part of what it means to represent Christ. Any other thoughts from that passage? Okay, sacrificial love. Good. Doing what Christ does. Okay, great.
I was going to say reaching out to God and Christ to be able to receive help and patience from Him and give Him time to work in the other person or people around that is where we're working with.
Okay. So seeing yourself as a servant of God and recognizing that therefore you want to demonstrate the kind of patience and love toward others that God would be showing them. Okay. So in how we conduct our ambassadorial role, we want to ensure that we're doing no harm to others. We want to be found without fault and to not put an obstacle in anyone's way by the way that we're doing life, okay? So we're kind of building on the idea of what does an ambassador do. So an ambassador has some things to say as a representative of their, let's say, king. An ambassador has a way that they do life, the way they conduct themselves that is related to their representing their king. Let's move on to Philippians 2, 5 through 7. It says, have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. So anything we add to the idea of what it means to be a representative of Christ, ambassador of Christ from that passage? We've already talked about being servants of God. Humility, okay. So the call is to have a likeness of mind to Christ, right? And the emphasis in this passage is actually in the humility of Jesus in the way that he came to serve others, not thinking of his own interests, but of the interests of others, right? So there is a humility. There is a having the mind of Jesus, to think the way Jesus thinks in situations. All right, we'll do one more, and then we'll try and summarize some of these things. So Romans 15, 1 through 3 and verse 7 says, we who are strong have an obligation to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good to build him up. For Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. And then verse 7, therefore, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. So again, focusing on the reason we're to have an obligation to bear with the failings of the weak is verse 3, for Christ did not please himself. But instead, he actually took the reproaches of those who were reproached on himself. And then again, we see a connection. We're to welcome others. Why are we to welcome others? What does the verse say specifically? Yeah, right? So there's a connection between what Jesus did. He welcomed us, and therefore we are called to welcome others. So here again, we see a direct connection between what we are called to do, how we are called to live and relate to one another based upon what it means to be like Jesus, to do what Jesus did, to represent Jesus in how we live out our lives. So with that in view, then, let's formulate some questions. I'm going to summarize that all into kind of three main areas of what it means to be an ambassador. And then want us to be thinking, what are some questions that we would ask in order to fulfill that representative role? So the first one is, an ambassador represents the message of the king. Okay, so an ambassador is called to say not just his own thoughts, but bring the message of the king. So if that's true, what would be a question that someone in an ambassadorial role, someone who's representing another, what would they need to ask if they have to speak a message in a particular situation? Let me put it in more concrete terms. If you came into work and your boss said, I can't make this meeting, I want you to go to that meeting and speak to these men, what would you ask your boss? What do you want me to say? Thank you. I wasn't trying to be complicated, but this is really a key question. What does my king want to communicate to this person in this situation, right? If you're tasked with bringing the message of the king to someone else, then you need to know and therefore ask the question, what does my king want to say? What is his message? What would he speak into this situation? So that's a really good question to ask as we're relating to others. What does my king want to communicate to this person or the situation? Second area, an ambassador represents the methods of the king. And we haven't put in exactly those terms, but we've talked about how Jesus does things in a certain way and how we should also do them in a similar way. And so if that is true, what would be a question that an ambassador who is charged to act on behalf of the king should ask? If you're charged to act on behalf of your king, what should you ask? Okay, what does the king want specifically with regard to what you do? Right? So we're not just asking what does the king want me to say, but how does the king want me to approach this situation? What would his methodology be? How would he engage this person? How would he act? What would be his approach to bringing restoration or reconciliation or renewal? Who would he call into the meeting? Who would he talk to first? What words would he choose? What kind of preparation would be involved? These are things that are asking, not just what does the king say and then saying it, but how would Jesus go about engaging this person or the situation? So as an ambassador, you're called to represent Jesus, not only in the words you say, but in the way you go about it. Yeah.
I think you're concentrating on what does the king, how does he want you to approach that, but I think that's it. There's a shift because the king is going as an ambassador, as sending you as an envoy to this other culture, these other representatives or whatever. You got to think about what the receivers are going to perceive, and so you're taking what the king's desires are, you're translating them to how am I going to be heard? My methods are going to have to match that. And when I approach these people that he wants me to represent him to, so it's kind of, it's not just what the king's saying, thinking, but how he wants them, wants you to communicate to the people you're going to meet with. So there's kind of a shift, a little bit of shift in that, in my mind.
Sure, yeah. So I think the point might be then that when we ask the question, what does my king want me to say in this situation? What does my king want me to do in this situation? The assumption is that the king wants us to engage with people and situations in a way that's helpful, in a way that's culturally informed, in a way that brings some understanding to the situation, and in a way that if the king were there personally himself, this is how he would go about doing it, right? So you're representing someone in that situation, yeah. Okay, so speaking truth in love would be a way that we would expect Jesus, if he were there personally, to go about dealing with people and situations, right? And so if that's part of the message and the method, then that's got to be part of how we are doing the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a great point. On a human level, if a king sends out an ambassador, a representative, then you're kind of there, you're relying on channels of communication, but no king or president is going to be able to say in honest, genuine words, I'm going to be there with you. In fact, I'm dwelling in you, and I will empower you and give you the words you need and help you through the situation. That's unique to the Christian reality that as you are sent out, you're not sent out alone. You're sent out literally with the presence of God dwelling in you, the power of the Spirit of God working in you, informing your mind and your thoughts so that you can have real hope that the things you bring to the table and to that conversation aren't just what you're trying to cobble together, but God working in the moment to help you sort through stuff and say something that's helpful, do something that's helpful. So that's a great point. All right, so I'm going to need to keep moving because I'm getting behind my schedule. So the third one, an ambassador represents the character of the king. So it's not just that you bring a message. It's not just that you say, this is what the king wants to be done in terms of, you know, trade has to happen this way, and we're going to move these caravans this way, and this is how we're going to finance a thing. But actually, you need to demonstrate the character of the person that you represent, the honesty, the integrity, the consideration, the way of relating to others in a way that bears out what the king would want his character to be understood as. You represent that in how you relate to others. So if that's true, what's a question that you would want to ask as an ambassador representing a king?
I don't think it's so much asking a question. I think you need to get to know the king to know what he wants.
Okay. So it might not be a question, but I could probably frame that as a question. What is the king's character like that needs to be brought to bear in this specific situation? Or we could say, what is the disposition of my king in this situation? So we can speak in general terms. God is gracious. He's loving. He's kind. He's angry at times, right? So the question might be, though, in this situation, in this conversation, what is the disposition, the character of God that Jesus would be bringing forth, that he would want to be seen and known? We might even say that there are times when all of the attributes of God are always true all the time, but there are times when more of one is manifestly seen than at other times. And so we need to be asking, what is it that I need to be showing forth here? And how does that look like what Jesus would be doing? Yeah. Okay, so if Jesus is someone who genuinely cares and is interested in people, then that should be part of the character disposition that we bring to our ambassadorial representation of Jesus. Okay, so here's a question. As you consider the possibility of serving as an ambassador for Jesus in each of these three roles we've been talking about, what are some specific things that you would do to figure out what does Jesus want to say? What does Jesus want to do? What would Jesus display of his character in the situation? How do you go about figuring that out? Yeah. So great response. I mean, be in the Word that gives us a ton of information about how Jesus went about doing things and what Jesus had to say to people. And I think we could broaden that out to the whole of the scriptures that Jesus authored with God from all eternity. What has God had to say about what he cares about, and how does God go about doing things? So the scriptures would be a huge source as you're thinking about a situation that you're involved in, a person you want to help. You certainly would be wise to go to the scriptures and the gospel and ask the question, what would Jesus be doing? What would Jesus be saying in this situation? What else? Listen. Okay. Wouldn't it be great if we all increased our measure and started learning how to ask God, help me, Lord, know what you want to say in this situation. Help me, Lord, know what you want me to do. To be honest, my life is often on such a fast-paced trajectory, I'm rarely stopping long enough to take time to ask God, Lord, what do you want me to say to my wife in this situation? How should I frame this email, Lord, in a way that's going to bring honor to you and help this person in this difficult situation? Now, in my better moments, I will do that. And it's great, and God does indeed help. But certainly, I think most of us could improve on this front, where we're actually asking God to help us, give us insight as we are engaged in other people's lives. Often we're just bumbling into and offering the first thought of advice that comes to my mind and hope it helps, you know? Here's a key thing to keep in mind, though, as we're thinking about representing Jesus, saying what he would want to say, doing what he would want to do, representing the character of Jesus, all of those things with the intention of helping others grow and see real life change, what's going to happen is if you really take that role seriously, if you really say, okay, I want to be an ambassador for Jesus, I want to represent him, all of a sudden, you're going to bump up against desire after desire after desire in your own heart that resists saying what Jesus would say and doing what Jesus would do and reflecting the character of Jesus, because honestly, we've got our own desires that would be impeded if I have to drop my agenda to help you with your stuff, because that's going to take time and energy, and it's going to mean I don't know what's going on in your heart, and so I'm going to have to invest some thought, and I'm going to have to humbly be able to say, I just don't get it, and it might mean I don't get to watch my football game or my golf tournament. It might mean that I have to make a lunch appointment that I wasn't planning to. It might mean that I don't get to work on my shed when I was planning to work on my shed because all this is going on. And frankly, some of the stuff you do just isn't very fun. It's ugly. And I don't enjoy having to hear about it. So, if we're going to be honest, one of the major impediments to God's work in the lives of other people that you're connected to is not their stuff, it's your stuff. It's what controls my heart's desires and therefore my willingness, my disposition to be able to relinquish stuff I want so I can do the stuff of the King. That's a huge thing, and I don't have an easy fix for it other than to say we've got to acknowledge that and be willing to let God and others expose that in our lives so that we'll experience the kind of change that needs to happen so that we can be useful in the lives of others. My usefulness to the church, my usefulness to you, is limited significantly by controlling desires for what I want my life to look like and what I don't want it to be bogged down or hassled by. Right? And so you should be praying for me, God, help that man not just stand up on Sunday mornings and talk all the good talk, but be willing to relinquish stuff that controls my daily routine so that I would bring the message, bring the work of the King into the lives of others around me. And it's hard to do. And often I am too stubborn and selfish with my time and my energy and my stuff to do that for others. So let me just leave that where that is, and let's move on. I want to take a couple of minutes to begin to develop a model for how to visualize producing lasting, fruitful life change. So in your notes, you'll see something like this. There's some arrows and some lines. I want you to just think about what you would fill in, where you would put these categories: bad fruit, healthy fruit, Band-Aid, heart, and temporary fruit. You can just kind of draw those in or write the words in those lines. Just fill in the blanks there. How would you put a diagram together? I realize this is coming out of nowhere, and so if you have no idea, that's okay. But just try and think, what kind of a diagram would we construct to reflect or picture what it means to pursue life change? So I'll give you some hints here as we go along, okay? So we've got the I don't know if that's the forbidden fruit. It's got a bite out of it, but it's the bad fruit, okay? So that's where we're starting. So if we've got bad fruit, if we start with bad fruit, where do we go from there? Okay, well, now we've got some temporary fruit. Sort of looks like a rotten banana, doesn't it? All right, so are you following with me? All right, what's over here? Okay, so we've got some healthy fruit, okay? So now you can probably fill in the blanks. If we want healthy fruit, what's going to be the connector there? Heart change, okay? And if you want just temporary fruit, then you're going to throw on a Band-Aid. You're saying that I did something that's not intuitive? I can blame Paul Tripp because I didn't actually originally design this. So good, thank you. I'll write him an email and let him know your thoughts on that. Good. Okay, well, I didn't promise it would be intuitive, but I hope we'll find it to be helpful as we continue on. So let's think about this for a minute. What are some conditions that a Band-Aid is helpful for versus a coronary stent? Okay, so any kindergartner, teachers, workers in here? I know of one. Okay. So, Brenda, what are Band-Aids good for? Owies. What does a Band-Aid do for an owie? For peace of mind, okay? There you go. Hide that baby, you know? Okay, so I think we've all worked with younger kids, and they fall and skin their elbow, or they break their chin open, right, and there's blood coming out, and that's scary stuff, right? And so you know that if you can just cover that up and give it a boo-boo kiss, things get better, generally, right? So there are some things that a Band-Aid can do. What are some things that a Band-Aid might not be good at fixing? A broken arm, okay? I put a Band-Aid on it, you know? Go home. What else? Hemorrhaging, okay, some kind of an internal injury where you're bleeding internally, putting a Band-Aid on that probably isn't going to help. Yeah? Okay, no true and real change. So are you going, you're into the application stage, aren't you? Yeah. Okay, so we've got Band-Aids. They can fix the boo-boo. They can bring some peace of mind, but they're probably not going to fix major internal hemorrhaging, cancer, stroke, a blood clot. There are a lot of health conditions that putting a Band-Aid on just isn't going to fix, right? What about a coronary stent? What purpose does it serve? Anybody, you don't have to show if you've had one, but anyone here willing to admit that they've had some kind of heart surgery? Okay, all right. Okay, good. So Carol is connected to the emotional realities of what it means to have someone stick something up through your artery all the way down into your heart and then blow up a balloon and hope that baby sticks, right? So doesn't that sound exciting? Let's all line up, you know? But your point is well taken. If that intervention is not made, then there is real risk of serious life-threatening condition developing because the heart isn't getting the blood that it needs to function, and therefore the rest of your body is going to cease to live because it's not getting the oxygenation it needs that the heart provides that pumps the blood around. Okay, so with that in mind, where with all that we've been talking about, where are we going to focus our attention if we want lasting life change? in the heart. Okay? Right? So lasting life change is going to be focused on the heart. That's where we're going to be mainly involved. Now, we might need to put some Band-Aids on. Melanie mentioned that sometimes you need to stop the destructive behavior in its tracks, right? You need to take the keys away from the drunk driver so they don't go and kill someone. You need to do some things. But ultimately, if you just put the Band-Aids on and don't deal with the heart disposition that's causing those behaviors, you won't have brought about any lasting change. So with that in view then, let's look at some ways in which, or some components of effective heart intervention that we're going to be talking about as weeks go on. But I want you to look at those four words, do, know, love, speak, and put those in the circles in what you think would be a logical order, a non-intuitive logical order, as Molly would say. where would you put do, know, love, speak? What would you put in the first circle there, in the blue one? Love, okay. All right? Any other thoughts? Anyone want to disagree? No. I thought you were saying no, I don't want to. Oh, okay, fine with me. I'll pick someone else. Okay, so Molly has love in the first one. Someone else says no. You got to start out with no. Any other thoughts? Okay, well, God's not on our list, so he doesn't get the trump card this time. So from those four things, do, know, love, speak. What do you put in the second one? Love. Okay, so we've got a competition going on between love and no. Okay. Any other thoughts? No? No other thoughts? Or this is getting confusing. All right, let's what'd you put in the third one? Speak. Someone put do. Kindness. What else? Any other thoughts? I'm glad we're all on the same page here. What'd you put in the fourth one? Speak, do? Okay, so I think there's a general consensus that we're putting know and love in the front end and do and speak in the back end, right? Even though we don't have the same order. Okay, so let's just fill in some circles here. Love, know, speak, and do. Okay, but here's the deal. These are not steps. So I know I probably threw you off, but there's not a logical order necessarily. When you're dealing with people in heart intervention where you're just going to do this and you've accomplished this and then you move on to this and once you've nailed this down, then you move on to this. In actual fact, when you're dealing with people, all four of these are always involved. Now, there may be times where one is being emphasized more than the other, but we're going to be engaged in loving people, and we'll talk more about what that means. We're going to be involved in knowing other people, and we're going to be involved in speaking specific things to other people and doing some things and helping them to do some things. All is kind of a concurrent process as we move down. And so I want to help you not think just in terms of this is a 5-step process or a 12-step process. I know that when we're talking about dealing with people in heart intervention, we're always asking the question, how do I love this person well? How do I know this person? What does God want to say to this person? And how do I help this person do the things that they need to do? And so for the next 3 weeks, we're going to try and put on some sort of practical, in the flesh, what does it look like to love someone? What does it look like to get to know someone helpfully? What does it mean to speak not just my whatever comes to mind, but speak the message of Jesus into a specific situation that a person is facing? And how do we practically help people do the things that God is calling them to do? How do we come alongside them so that all the stuff that we've helped them to see or that God has helped them to see through us translates into real life outcomes and fruit, healthy fruit? So out of time, so we're going to stop there. I was going to spend a little bit of time going into the specifics of love, no, speak, and do, but we are going to be picking those up in the next few weeks. So I think we'll stop there. Next week, we're going to be talking about building relationships in which God's work will thrive. So this is really going to focus on what it means to love people and how do we know people in a way that positions us to speak the words of Jesus into their life. So let me pray for us. Lord, I thank you for this amazing thing that you would choose to use us as your representatives, that you would empower us to be your hands and feet and bring your words into the lives of those around us. It is an amazing thing. It's a humbling thing, God, because we just know that we are also a people of great need. But I ask, God, that you would even now, by your Spirit, pour out fresh encouragement and confidence and expectation that you are alive and you are working in our midst and that you can use us, even us, to accomplish your great and glorious purposes. God, we trust that you're good on your word when you promise that this is what you will do and that you are wise and that you've determined that this is how you will do it. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.